So I was up in New York this weekend visiting a lovely friend, and it was SantaCon, a SantaCon weekend, Jeff Merrick. Yes, indeed.
A what? Hang on, like a convention of Santas? Like, we have something here in, where is it? Cambridge? No, where is it? ElvisCon, where there's like a gajillion Elvises. Bracebridge? Nah.
Collingwood, I think?
Anywhere. Collingwood, that's it, Josh. Collingwood. In Collingwood, every year there's a ElvisCon. Where dudes from, and dudettes from all over congregate and dress up like Elvis and do Elvis things. I don't know, eat fried peanut butter sandwiches, I guess.
Do they go on bar crawls is the question. That's the real issue.
I would think so, but Elvis was more of a eater slash pill taker than boozer.
So the SantaCon is a coast, I think it's bi-coastal, I think it's a coast-to-coast thing, where a bunch of people dress up in different Christmas outfits. Mostly yes. Santa Claus, and in the case of our ladies, slutty Santas, slutty, scantily clad Santas, which is, you know, never a bad thing, I don't think.
So it's
and
like,
they go on a gigantic bar crawl.
For girls, it's like Halloween, where it's your free pass to dress like a slut.
Yeah, well,
doesn't matter what your outfit is.
I don't appreciate your slut shaming of the girls who take part in SantaCon, sir. But
I think it's great.
It's true that. That whilst you and I would be wearing a full Santa Claus regalia, big belly, big beard, the hat, the whole bit, the ladies in our lives might be wearing, I don't know, a pair of moose antlers and a bikini top. You know, it'd be kind of like that sort of thing.
You know how we look at that, Wish? I look at that, not as slut-shaming, trust me. I look at that when I sort of relate it to when people say, oh, I watched this movie last night, it's my guilty pleasure. Oh, I just read this fluff book, it's my guilty pleasure. Like, if you weren't doing that, you'd be reading The New Yorker, for crying out loud, or reading Mother Jones or something, or reading, you know, Dostoevsky or Soren Kierkegaard. Oh, it's my guilty pleasure. No, just be honest, you like doing it, so just go and do it. You don't need to have, like, one dedicated day of the year to do it.
First of all, my guilty pleasure is the Ryan Reynolds, Anna Faris film Just Friends, which I consider to be one of the funniest movies ever made, but doubtful that it fits into that purview for other people. And secondly, I get what you're saying. And the thing about SantaCon for me is that, and I've heard this from a few New Yorkers about what this weekend is, it gets to be kind of scary. It gets to be kind of scary because by the end of the night, you are seeing Santa Claus throwing up on the street. You are seeing Santa removing his beard so he can yak on some street corner.
No.
And literally, like, I was walking around at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning in New York on Saturday night, and you would literally see, like, a Santa coat on the sidewalk. Then a few steps later, a Santa beard. And then a few steps later, Santa boots. And like as if the Santa suit is burning their skin and they have to start ripping it off at some point in the night. Like, this is what you see. The best part of it, though, actually happened at the beginning of my journey. Okay, I went on a New Jersey Transit train out of Woodbridge, New Jersey, up to the city. And there were SantaCon people. This is like 11 o'clock in the morning. SantaCon people on the train going up the city for a day of merriment. So it's the usual uniform, you know, big Santa suit, big Santa hat, and a six-pack of beer. So this one guy gets on the train. He's wearing a Santa suit. He's wearing a Green Bay Packers hat, because I guess he's going to hang out in the city another day and watch the Packers and the Bears someplace. And he's carrying a giant six-pack of beer. And he's there with his friends, and he's got a couple girls with him, and they're all, you know, in their sexy Santa suits, whatever. So he's walking down the aisle of the New Jersey Transit train, and all of a sudden, you see this little kid's head pop up. And this is, I'd say, probably like 5 or 6 years old. Just a little a little button-cheeked kid. Just the adorable little kid, a little Muppet, if you will. Stands up on his seat and just goes, "Santa!" So here's this guy with a Packers hat, a six-pack cheap beer.
Yeah, man.
And at one point, he was walking down the aisle in a, I would say, a pretty deliberate pace. That pace picked up considerably when he was ID'd by a young boy as being Santa Claus. As he's walking by my seat, he literally says, "I feel like such an asshole right now."
Well, that's just it. Like, it's all fun and games. You go at night, dress as Santa, go get your ham on, and go have fun. But then in broad daylight, when kids are like, "Hey, look, there's Santa," and you have like a six-pack of Muscatel or whatever cheap, you know, booze you manage to hide underneath your beard.
Right.
What's got to go through your mind as Santa? Now, having said that, you know, to me, Wish, would be the ultimate in Santa humor. Not necessarily, you know, Santa's having to remove their beards to throw up after being, you know, overly served the evening before. Wouldn't you kill to see Walk of Shame Santa?
I think that's also part of the tradition.
Left his belt back at the apartment. Maybe one boot, had to get out of there in a hurry. Doesn't have the wig, but still has the beard. Oh, I don't know where the hat went.
He's got nothing but the beard. The whole night went sideways, and he runs out of her apartment wearing nothing but the beard. A couple of things about SantaCon. By the way, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it'd be kind of fun to do it. I was noodling through whether I would accomplish this.
I'm just on the website now, SantaCon.info. 37 countries, 276 locations. How did I not know about this? I'm the entertainment outsider, and I don't know about movies and television and, you know, things that normal people sort of understand as a common language. But how did I miss SantaCon? How long is this thing going?
I don't know what the numbers are, and I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show. But I think SantaCon's bigger than Kwanzaa. I mean, if you actually tallied up the numbers, it could be bigger than Kwanzaa. A couple of observations about SantaCon. First off, my heart was warmed as a guy who has a lot of Jewish friends who have to go through the motions on Christmas and do the whole thing and put up with all of our shit as you know, Christians. No. I was heartwarmed to see a few dreidels walking around during Santa.
Oh, nice.
People dressed as dreidels. Yeah, that was really good. Second
nice
thing, I already went back and forth with a dude on Twitter this morning about this. It's not simply just dressing up as Santa. You're dressing up as any number of other holiday iconography, be it I saw a Christmas cookie, I saw reindeer, I saw all kinds of stuff.
Grinch?
That's
how many Grinch? It's got to be a ton of Grinch.
I didn't see
a Grinch, right?
Did not
Come
see
on.
Grinch, but I did see
a
few. I did see a few Buddy the Elves from the movie Elf.
Oh, yeah.
And here's
sure.
my problem with this. Here's my problem with this. One, I don't like the outfit. I like a traditional elf outfit. Think of the elf outfits from the kid meeting Santa in A Christmas Story. The shoot your eye out elves, you know, when they're making them go down the big slide.
Yeah,
like, that's a traditional elf outfit. I like that. The Buddy the Elf outfit has always kind of struck me as being like a pukish color, like you ate too many edamame and then threw up your sake kind of color.
That's like with
not
the
very good.
Yellow tights, a green jacket. That deal?
Yeah, exactly. Not it's like edamame, puke, and bile. If you mix it together, it'd be that color scheme. Not a fan.
That's
the
lovely.
Other thing is, you listen, I'm speaking to you, Buddy the Elf costume wearer. You and I both know the only reason you're wearing it is so you can walk into the bar and see all the SantaCon Santas and just do the Santa, I know him joke from Elf. It's overplayed. It's done. It was done 5 years ago. It's not funny. And so that's what, if I was going to go as any kind of character, not to harken back to the same movie I referenced, I said this weekend, I might go as the leg lamp from A Christmas Story. Like, that might be my outfit. Somehow fashion myself.
The leg lamp is a great one.
Yeah.
That was shot in Toronto, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, they needed snow, obviously.
They did need snow, and it was shot at Runnymede Collegiate at Jane and Dundas.
Oh, man. You know that?
That bugs me now.
That bugs me that one of the quintessential American holiday classics has the stench of back bacon. I didn't even realize that until you said it.
And the pole scene was right out in the right behind Runnymede Collegiate. Come on, yo!
No.
Everything good comes from me. You're moving up here one day. Hey, listen, I'm on that SantaCon website, and if you go to sexy, because they sell costumes there, by the way, too.
Oh,
you know, free ad here. Go to the sexy Santa section, Greg.
Sexy Santa.
I may be all turned around on this from the adult Miss Vixen costume for only $24.99. That seems pretty. Mm-hmm. To adult fierce and festive. Adult fierce and festive.
Now, we did just receive a tweet about SantaCon that I think is worth mentioning. It was from, who was it from? It was from Emily St. Germain writes in that Gothamist, the website, has all sorts of anger towards the brofest SantaCon has become. And it is a brofest. It's a bit of a brofest. And there's a sign on this website talking about how obnoxious drunken behavior at or around this Christmas tree stand, blah, 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 blah. It is kind of a brofest. It is kind of loutish. And in fact, one of the bars at my friend's place had signs on the doors saying that no one in a Santa suit will be allowed inside the bar. So they're trying to preserve the bar from the Santas, from the drunken, obnoxious bro Santas that are invading New York City. So I guess there is a backlash, I'm sure, in true New York tradition. I remember when SantaCon was cool. Now it's terrible. Now everybody knows about it. It's overplayed.
Can't you even celebrate it ironically now, though? Like, what's the time difference between
I didn't want to give away.
You can ironically enjoy it.
I didn't want to give away this idea, but I'm going to give it away. Okay, this is my idea. I wanted to get a bunch of my friends together for SantaCon and go as giant pink Easter bunnies, as a insurgent guerrilla offensive against all the Santa Clauses on Christmas, and just walk up to Santa's and start shit and just be like, oh, hey, what's up? So this is all for you then? What's for me? Oh, I'm sorry. You need little midgets, little slave midgets to make your toys? Guess what I do? I lay my eggs. I lay my friggin' eggs every year and give them to kids. How about that, fatty? Now, why would the Easter Bunny have a Jersey accent? Because it's me. That's probably why.
Would you rather drink with a room full of Santas or a room full of Easter Bunnies?
A room full of Santas, because inherently a room full of Easter Bunnies would be burnouts and drunks and remind me of Bruce Willis from the movie North.
I wouldn't stop laughing. I would not be able to stop laughing drinking. Who can be up? I got a buddy of mine. His name's Tony Napo. He's an actor.
A buddy.
Who actually has a bunny costume. And Tony is like, you look him up on Facebook, Tony Napo. He's like big, strong, tough, rough, Italian dude, you know, dark hair, big arms, tattoos, and he has this bunny outfit. And I'm telling you, Wish, when he puts on that bunny outfit, it doesn't matter what he's doing. This guy can't stop laughing. Even thinking about Tony Napo wearing his bunny outfit, to me, is the height of comedy. I'll take a room full of bunnies before I'll take a room full of Santas.
One last thing on drinking Santas by the way, this is after all a hockey podcast, if we're talking drinking Santas, if you've not seen the clip of all the Santa Clauses showing up at Nassau Coliseum for the Rangers Islanders Christmas game, and the Santas pull apart their suits and reveal them to be Ranger fans on Islanders ice. If you've not seen this clip, please track it down. It's a classic.
It's outstanding.
Paul Vogel writes in. In Chicago, there is the 12 Bars of Christmas. Everyone dresses up in Christmas stuff, Santa suits, PJs, and the like. Oh. The highlight of the year is when a girl is sitting on the sidewalk crying while her boyfriend is screaming at her to stop embarrassing herself, although this form of communications happens every night in Wrigleyville. See, that's how it ends up. And then it gets really embarrassing because the dude inevitably is dressed like Santa Claus.
That's lovely. Hey, you know what? It was only up until, and how would you feel about this? Because basketball kind of has full domain over this. But it was only up until 75 or 76, that it was an annual tradition in the NHL to play on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Would you be for that? Would you be into that? Christmas Day, Christmas Day game?
Well, that's a real tough one because I'm obviously selfish about that. Like, I like the idea of not having to necessarily work on Christmas Day, right? Much like, you know.
Settle in and watch a Christmas Day game?
Well, yeah, but it's not. I mean, I'm different. Like, that's a question for people who don't have to write about the Christmas Day games. Like, I'd have to, right? And do
what? No,
Christmas
I know what
Day
you do. You delegate. Harrison would get it. Harrison would get it. Sean would get it, or something like that.
Well, Leahy and I would obviously not work on Christmas. But I don't know what. I mean, do they celebrate Christmas in Vancouver? Probably not. By the way, there's a columnist named Bruce Jenkins he writes for the San Francisco Chronicle, I think. Okay. This is on Deadspin today. He suggested that David Stern ruin Christmas with basketball because he's Jewish.
What? Are you insane? Ruin
Phil
Christmas?
Writing about Phil Jackson. Jackson is among many observers who point out the obvious. That Stern, this is not Phil Jackson's words, this is Jenkins' words. That Stern, who celebrates Hanukkah, has no real feel for Christmas in the first place. So obviously, if there were games on Christmas, you know why there'd be games on Christmas, sir. There'd be games because Gary Bettman is Jewish.
Because he's a Jewish commissioner, yeah, obviously.
More logs on the anti-Semitic fire when it comes to Gary Bettman, right?
Let's go back in the history of the NHL. Frank J. Calder, Jewish? Don't think so. Clarence Campbell, Jewish? Don't think so. No, this is not because any commissioner is Jewish. I just think it makes good sense to have a game on Christmas, to be honest
with you. That said, Other side of the equation, Jeff Halpern, Jew. Aki Berg, probably a Jew.
Finnish Jew, if anything. Mike Camilleri, half, right? Italian Jewish.
Half Jewish, right. There you go. Right, not the Italian side, but the other side, probably.
No.
I would Alexei von Dreidel from... Well, there probably isn't anybody named Alexei von Dreidel. Anyways, listen, we have an actual player coming on the show again. We now have a two show streak of actual players coming on the show. Michael Delzato.
Yeah, both defensemen. We had PK Subban Friday. Both defensemen and both without contract. That's pretty much what this podcast can bring you. Locked out defensemen, sans contract.
So please join us on Wednesday for Sean O'Donnell. So Delzato is going to join us on the show. The question of the day is about players like Michael Delzato, in the sense that we're talking about NHL players. And the question of the day is, what kind of effect do you think the lockout has had on these players? How have the players changed because of the lockout? Now, the impetus for this question is simple. Do we think that the way the league has behaved and the animosity in this lockout and the fact that it's gone on so long and all this other jive, do we think it's kind of made the players less enthusiastic, to the point of apathy, to the point of maybe FU anger, to not work with the league and to not be the guys that they were after the last lockout, bending over backwards and doing things like, 24/7 to help sell hockey?
Yep, I think the byproduct of all of this, and I think this will really happen if an entire season gets scrubbed, and I don't think a season's getting scrubbed, but if it does, I wonder what the psyche of the hockey player, because for years and years, ask anyone who's covered more than just hockey, it was worth the baseball beat, the basketball beat, football, whatever, they'll tell you to a person wish, as you well know. Hockey players are salt of the earth, are the best guys to deal with, by and large, easy, outgoing, nice guys, you know, accommodating. They have this sense of doing what's right for the game, and all the great cliches about hockey players are all true. I just wonder if this players association gets beaten down and an entire season's worth of paychecks is taken away from them over, you know, the finest of hairs, which is really what we're down to now. Length of CBA and length of term on contract are really the only two major issues that are out there, right? And those two can really be settled by some serious negotiation or like an afternoon's worth of negotiation. If a season gets taken away from these guys, do you think it stiffens their spine? And I'll give you an example. Do you think National Hockey League Players Association, where they will only do what's called for in their contracts? That's the way it was under Bob Goodenough, okay? And it was impossible for the NHL to move under Bob Goodenough because every time they proposed something, quote-unquote, for the good of the game, to grow the game, the Players Association wanted something back for that movement. Do you think that happens on an individual basis with the players? Players will be asked to do things. Sorry, it's not in my contract. Players don't do that now. Players in the NHL go way above and beyond. And I'm going to bring up another example probably after the break here. Way above and beyond to service this game. I wonder if that changes at the expiration of this labor negotiation.
All right. We're going to get to your example right after we start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Everything else just sounds like...
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
It's a brand new podcast.
Debate hockey.
I don't touch salmon at all.
Oh, that's refreshing.
Pop culture.
I can dig it. Can you dig it?
And more hockey.
I fought a Rottweiler and you got blocked by Ryan Whitney.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we? Indeed, we will start the show proper. Coming up very shortly, Michael Delzato will join us. You bring up the will the players go the extra mile line. We'll also kind of frame it as will they have lost their smile because of this lockout as well.
I think will this be the CBA that finally cements for both sides that this is a capital B business and that's all?
It should be a capital B partnership. That's what it was last time we got through this. I mean, the players, look what they've done. Listen, they went above and beyond. You know, they tried to get their personalities out there. They did the whole Twitter stuff at 24/7. The All-Star game all of a sudden becomes a thing where now we've got prop comedy and shit. I mean, it's like they've definitely put themselves out there a little bit more since the last lockout to try to, I don't know, not only win fans back from the bitterness of losing a season, but also kind of elevate the league in a way based on their personalities. And I agree with you, man. If I'm a player and I go through all this shit and I see legal filings in which, my name is being tossed into a lawsuit and things of that nature, I'm not gonna want to be Patrick Kane putting on the Superman cape next time we do an All-Star game.
No, not at all. Forget it. No way. It's not in my contract. I'm not doing it. And you know where the big battleground's gonna be? I think if it gets to that point, the battleground will be the Winter Classic and it'll be a workplace safety issue. There is no way that the National Hockey League Players Association will, if this negotiation continues on its vitriolic pace, I can't see any way that the Players Association goes forward with the Winter Classic unless the conditions are 100%. If one thing is wrong, they ain't playing. It becomes workplace safety. Do you think for a second they would have played that Pittsburgh-Washington game? With the rain, in the dark, where the shadows are all different. Not a freaking chance.
No.
But you know what? The players said, yep, you know what? Go to the game. We've got to get this done. Let's do this. If this thing gets really vitriolic, like more so than it even is now, do you think that becomes a battleground state, the Winter Classic?
It could, but devil's advocate on this is the players are inherently good. They're inherently good people. And at the end of the day, the bigger the sport gets, the better it is for them because they share in the revenue pool. So at the same time, we want to believe that maybe they're going to be assholes about this and they're going to just be bitter and not go the extra mile and all of a sudden it's tougher to get an autograph for them and the whole thing. But A, they love the fans. B, I think they want to see hockey thrive. And time also heals some wounds, you know?
I'll tell you what, the one thing that this lockout has done for the Players Association, I think now, more so than ever, specifically, you know, under Kelly or under Saskin, everything posts good now, it's become a union again, Wish.
Yes.
It really has, Greg. It really has become a union. Once again, how far and how stiff does the spine get of the PA? I think the next few weeks, and if it goes the next few weeks, maybe the next few months, we'll tell that tale. In the meantime, our next guest, our only guest on the program today, is a New York Rangers defenseman, recently returning from the Swiss League, where he played with Rapperswell. He is Michael Delzato of the New York Rangers. You know him, number 4. He joins the Merrick Wyshynski podcast now. Michael, how are you today, bud?
Good, thanks. How are you?
We're good. Thanks so much for coming aboard. How have you changed through this lockout? Greg and I were just talking about, you know, the one thing about hockey players we've always heard for years, and it's true, you know, they're great guys. They want to do what's good for the game and grow the game and do the right thing. But has this made you or maybe any other members of the Players Association more cynical to the entire business process that is the NHL?
Yeah, well, obviously I'm still young, and it being my first lockout, you do realize it is a business. And one thing that has changed on my outlook of the game is how much it does affect not only the players, the owners, the fans, but so many small businesses that survive off of hockey. And you realize how big it is, more so in Canada, obviously being from Toronto and being here now, seeing how many people are affected and, you know, running into random people, whether it's the grocery store or on Sunday to watch my little cousin play hockey, and, you know, just running into random people there and listening to what they have to say. And, it really does affect everyone.
That said, I mean, the premise of our question for the listeners today is, do you think that your union brethren, your teammates, whomever, are going to be hesitant to go the extra mile like they did in the 7 years after the last lockout? In other words, say it's the Winter Classic and shit happens and you have to play at night and there's pools of water on the ice and the lights are not as good as they should be. Would you kind of maybe think twice about going down and doing the extra bit to help this league based on what the league's done to you guys over the last several months?
Tricky question. You know what? As a union and players together, we've come closer than ever these past few months. And the owners, there's been a lot of, I guess as you'd see in the media, people would call it fights going back and forth, and we're really just trying to do the best thing for the game and try not to get hurt as we did 7-8 years ago. So but as players, we've come closer and closer as this battle has gone forward.
What do people say to you? You mentioned you went to watch your little cousin's game the other day. When you're at the rink, when you're out going to get a cup of coffee or a lunch and you run into hockey fans, what do they say to you overwhelmingly? What's their, what's the nature of that conversation like?
It's hit or miss. You get some people who really just support the players and want us, just want us back on the ice and want to watch hockey again. And then you have some people who are pretty vocal and call us greedy and say, you know, it's billionaires fighting against millionaires. And, so you never know what you're going to get, but, you know, just judging from that, you see that people do care and people want hockey. So you try to take the most out of it. And as I said before, we're trying to get a deal done and we want to play and we realize how much this does affect, everyone around.
How was your Swiss adventure?
That was great. It was a good experience. You know, I was in a small town. I got to ride my bike to the rink every day at the mountain during the ride. So it was beautiful. You know, definitely a little bit different than New York City than what I'm used to. But, you know, it was a great experience. And it's a very different lifestyle over there, very relaxed and laid back. You know, I had a great group of teammates over there who welcomed me in right away, and I got along well with them. So I definitely enjoyed my time over there.
What are the rinks like? I've always been curious, and I've seen some gorgeous rinks where, you know, half of the rink is all glass, and you have natural sunlight coming in, and this old wood, and it looks just aesthetically, Michael, it looks stunning. What are the rinks like there in Switzerland when you played?
There's a lot of different ones. You know, I was only there 6 weeks. I didn't get to play in some of the bigger ones, but, you know, you have some ends of the rink. One end of the rink is all, like in our home rink, one end is all standing room where you have the fans waving their flags the whole game, cheering the whole game. And it really feels like a soccer match more than anything. And it's pretty cool. We played in Ambry where the whole rink wasn't actually enclosed. So it was open to outdoors, which it was pretty cold there. So it was almost, it was actually colder than the Winter Classic game, believe it or not, because we didn't have heated benches. Because when I first got there, I saw all these guys wearing turtlenecks and I was kind of, you know, giggled and make jokes at them. And they said, oh no, you wait. And sure enough, we get there and, they started laughing at me afterwards.
Hey, we had PK Subban on the show last week, and talked about his contract situation. You obviously also have your contract deal, sort of up the air as a restricted free agent. What went into not signing before the CBA expired? Was it just not being able to find the right deal with the Rangers or any other sort of
motivation? Yeah, it was just, we didn't seem to find a middle ground, before the lockout was over. And you know, obviously nothing can be done now, no negotiating or anything until this lockout is over. But, no, we definitely talked, a few times in the summertime, and leading up to the lockout, and we just, weren't able to find a middle ground as far as agreeing.
You know, it's interesting too, because I was originally of the opinion that, you know, players like yourself and PK Subban, Ryan O'Reilly, who else you throw into that mix? Jamie Benn, I guess with Dallas would be another one. I thought maybe, you know what? They didn't get their contracts done before the CBA expired. Oh man, they missed the window. But the more that I think about it, you know, considering whatever, you know, clawback there may end up being, you may come out of it on the bonus side of things in that you'll be able to do a deal after the clawback or however the NHL wants to define it actually happens, and you can make the deal based all on your own terms and then not have a percentage initially taken away other than escrow.
Yeah, it's you could look at it both ways, saying, you know, the salary could come back and there might not be room depending what it is set back at. So it could work either way depending on the team and what their salary cap situation is. So who knows? We'll see what happens, and then we'll see if it works out in our favor or not, I guess.
How's your injury, by the way?
Good. You know, it's getting better. Kind of some good days, some okay days. It really depends. You know, it wasn't the best weekend this weekend. I had a heavy lift on Friday, and just to see where I was at, and it didn't respond amazingly, but it's nothing serious. Nothing that's going to keep me out if a season were to start. It's just, the reason I came back was just to make sure everything was okay. And, I'm ready to go if the season is to start, sometime soon.
More important question. Have you worn your sweater with the reindeer threesome yet this month? Do you save that for Christmas?
You know what? It's still in New York, and my brother and his fiance are actually living at my apartment right now, and they'll be moving back, or they're coming back for Christmas on Friday. And I'm glad you reminded me. I might have them sneak that back and see what kind of reviews I get with the family. I don't think my mom will be too pleased if I wear that on Christmas Eve.
Dude, it was one of the funniest things on 24/7. It was very, very subtle, but for those that caught it, it really was, you know what? It was like an Easter egg for those who were really paying attention to 24/7 on, what's on Michael Delzato's sweater. You mentioned playing, and the RBC Play Hockey Charity Challenge is December 19th. 7 p.m. at the Mattamy Athletic Center. Hockey fans may know that better as, Maple Leaf Gardens. Team Stamkos facing off against Team PK Subban. You'll be playing on a team with your old Markham Waxer teammates, Steven Stamkos. Tell us a little about this one.
It's going to be fun. You know, I texted Stammer the day before I was coming back from Switzerland, and he obviously knew what was going on. He said if I was feeling healthy, yes, if I would play in it. And I didn't know much about the event, obviously, being overseas. But as soon as I came back, I got up to date on it. And, you know, obviously the season gets pretty busy. And even in the summertime when the season is on, and anytime you have an opportunity to give back, and especially for kids. And, you know, you look at the roster, a lot of guys are from the Toronto area. And being able to give back here, it's something that we enjoy doing. And we have the time to do it now, so it works out well, and I'm pretty excited for the game. And a lot of guys that I know well, and haven't played with Stammer in who knows how many years, so we'll see if we still have that chemistry.
You have no less than Nick Cronwall, Dion Phaneuf, and Steve Downey on your team. Is there hitting in the game? Why would you need all three of those cats on the same team?
If there is, I like our chances. I don't think there's going to be. I don't know how this how the teams worked out that way. I know Stammer and Downey are good buddies, and obviously play together in Tampa, so I see that one. But the other two, I'm not so sure about. But if it does get a little chippy, I'm hoping Dion's my partner and he'll be able to stick up for me.
You know, we mentioned the Markham Waxers a second ago, and you were part of one of these legendary minor hockey teams. You mentioned Steven Stamkos, one of your teammates, but also Cody Hodgson of the Buffalo Sabres on that team, Cameron Gauntz, drafted by the Colorado Avalanche in the second round as well. With all due respect to the Rangers, it almost made it to the Stanley Cup, and that London Knights squad, that Oshawa Generals squad you shared with John Tavares, was that the best team you ever played on?
I'd have to say yes, and I talked to someone about the team a couple days ago. I was watching a good family friend of mine who's playing minor midget right now, and actually in the rink I had the OHL Cup in, and it just seemed like such a different game. And we talked about, you know what, I did have a special team to play with, and it was a very different circumstance than I guess most people are used to. And every time I go downstairs and in my house, we have so many pictures from that team, and it was such a special group, and not only on the ice but off the ice. And you see nowadays, whether it's the GTHL or any league, all these kids kind of moving back and forth from teams. And, you know, we kind of had the same group of guys for the 5 years I was there, and we gelled so well. And, it was a big family, and it showed on the ice, and how much fun we had on the ice and how successful we really were.
Last one for me, Michael. How frustrating is it to not have a chance to see what this Rangers team is? I mean, the Nash trade happens. You guys get to the conference finals. It would seem to be the kind of year where you would have designs on winning a cup. So the question is that frustration balanced by the fact that you have avoided getting your ass ridden by John Tortorella for the last several months?
No, it's definitely frustrating. As you said, you know, that was a big trade for us, and we did lose a couple key components, but we picked up some as well. And, you know, we have a very young team still, but we've grown together the last couple years, and the main core of players have stayed together, and adding another offensive dynamic piece like Nasher is what we really needed. You know, scoring wasn't our forte last season, so it's unfortunate that we haven't played to this point, but we're really hoping that we get something underway come January, and hopefully we can make some noise again this season.
And Michael, last one here for me, and we thank you for your time and wish you the best of luck on the 19th for a great cause as well. I'm kind of an equipment junkie, and I've always wondered, and I always ask, you know, hockey players this, and I always get interesting answers out of it. How tough is it to break in new equipment? Specifically, how tough is it to break in a new stick or a new pair of skates? How long do you get used to it?
Knock on wood. Actually, funny story before I get to it. I was in Switzerland, and I went over with one pair of skates. Because that's all I had. And they happened to break in one of the games. I had someone's skate come over my boot and cut the boot open. And I didn't have any other skates there. And we had ordered some 2 weeks before, and nothing came in. So I actually had to miss the rest of the game and miss the next game because I had no skates, which was kind of the first time that's ever happened to me. And that was a big shock and one reason, I guess, or one example of how it is a little bit different over there as far as equipment go. But up until 2 years ago, I had a really tough time breaking in skates, and I've knock on wood, found the right pair and the right size, the right fitting, and I need basically one practice, two at the most, to wear them in a game. And as far as sticks go, I use a new stick every time I'm on the ice, and whether it's practice or game, so it's not an issue for me.
And it's always, you always use the same pattern?
Yeah, I've used the same pattern since I was a kid. I've used the same stick, same flex since my first year of junior. So coming up on seven years now. So it's, I've tried switching out of it on, you know, whether it's a slump or something not going well, and I just can't do it. I've used it for so long. I'm so comfortable with it. I haven't been able to switch. You know, I have some guys that still chirp me to this day about the candy cane tape I use on my shaft, but I've used it for too long. I can't switch out of it.
Why do you use the candy cane tape?
It's just the grip I'm used to. You know, I've tried different grips, slippery, you know, very, very grippy sticks, and it, no matter what I switch to, it's just not the same feel.
Huh. Interesting.
There you go. Michael Delzato, as a New Jersey Devils fan, I can't say that it upset me that the Rangers didn't win the Cup, but it does upset me how much I like you and the Rangers as a team. So good luck to you.
Thank you. Hopefully we get payback if this season does start. And then,
well, no, I don't. No, you can go through the Flyers. You go through the Flyers to get to the Cup. As long as one of you guys isn't winning the Cup, then I'm okay with it. You know, that's fine.
My
point is,
we need to get a season before we can get into this.
This is true. I like the Rangers team. I kind of also like the Flyers team. I think both you guys have good sides, and you know, the Devils had their glorious run to being defeated by the Kings, and hopefully the Rangers can, as much as it pains me to say this, can do well the next time they're playing hockey.
Say it, Greg. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for stopping by.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Michael Delzato of the New York Rangers. Wow, that was tough for you, eh, Wish?
I've said this before on the podcast, and it is tough for me. Like, it was much easier to be a Devils fan when the Rangers were a team of overpaid, mercenary ex-Oilers, mm-hmm. You know, that they were, you know, it was easy to hate them after the Gomez contract and stuff. You know, the Nash trade kind of veers off in that direction a little bit, but that was also sort of like good fortune smiling upon him because he wasn't going to go anywhere else, right? Yeah. I don't hate the Rangers team. Like, I liked a lot of the guys. Like, who doesn't like Ryan Callahan? I mean, who doesn't like Lundqvist?
Who doesn't like Dan Girardi?
Right?
Who doesn't like, you know, Michael Delzato, who we just
Even the guys that just left. I loved Dubinsky when he was there. I loved Prust when he was there. I mean, I like this. I like this Rangers team. And I also like a lot of what's on the Flyers. I love Giroux. I love Hartnell. I don't necessarily love Brzgalov. I mean, I love him from a comedy perspective. But I don't think I love him as a goaltender. I loved Pronger when he was healthy. There's a lot of there's a lot of guys on both teams that I really like, and it really pisses me off that I like them because I would really like to hate them.
Teaming into that mix for me. He's been one of the most underrated guys for the last however many years.
Granted, there's still some. I mean, luckily there's still a loathable player here and there. I mean, Briere,
Zach Rinaldo,
right?
Still got Zach Rinaldo, bud.
Actually, I'm trying to think like who I would hate on the Rangers.
How could you hate Daniel Briere?
He's a cheap shot artist. He's a little whiny guy. He's like such a dirty little player. Don't you think he's a dirty little player?
Are you familiar with the game called hockey? It's always had the dirty little player in it.
There's a difference between being a dirty little player like Verbeek or like Marchand and being a guy who's supposed to be on the up and up like Briere who takes these little cheap shots. Hate that.
I thought you loved that kind of heel. I don't know you at all, Greg Wyshynski.
I don't like that. He's a terrible heel. He's a loathsome heel. He's not a heel face like I like.
He is a legit heel because you really hate him. That's why, because you really can't stand him. That's what you hate. You hate that you really hate someone in the NHL. And you can't face the fact that he's a legitimate heel.
I hate what he did to Buffalo. The good people of Buffalo. My friends in Buffalo. You know, I'm going down this Rangers roster right now and I can't find
anything. Hang on a second. Whoa. What he did to Buffalo? He wanted to negotiate during the year, but Buffalo had some asinine stance that has now been changed that they wouldn't negotiate contracts during the year. That cost him Drury and that cost him Briere. Probably cost him Brian Campbell as well. They changed Lickety's split. Maybe in the Thomas Vanek offer sheet to smarten him up. Although that wasn't off season. That wasn't during the season, but they've since come off that stance. That was the reason why they let Briere. It's always been said, never let a guy get close to free agency because the closer he gets, he'll say, you know what? I will check it out. I will see what's there. I don't blame Daniel Briere for what he did at all. Not a chance.
I totally do. One, he should play for minimum wage to have the honor of playing in a beautiful city like Buffalo. That's obvious. Two, he signed with a conference rival. He should at least have the good sense to go and sign in the Western Conference.
He turned down Montreal. There you go.
How does this guy not know
the division rival
that a scant few years later Terry Pegula is going to buy the team? How does he not know that? All you got to do is wait around. You'll get yours.
Don't worry. You got to know that someone's going to come in who says things like, I don't care about making money. If I wanted to make money, I'd just drill another oil well. Oops. While Gary Bettman sits to his immediate right at the press conference. Oops.
But I'm
surprised the Players Association hasn't used that more during the lockout.
There is literally, I'm looking at this Rangers roster, there's literally only maybe one guy. There's like two guys at the most that I could say I don't like. I've never been a huge Gaborik fan, to be honest with you. But I don't, that's more like not liking the player versus finding the player loathsome, right? Like, I'm not a Gaborik fan.
He speaks well of you. I don't know why you'd say that about Gaborik.
Does he now?
Big fan of Puck Daddy.
And then the only other guy would be Michael Haley, but he doesn't even count. He's like an AHL guy.
I'm biased. I like Michael Haley because he's kind of a local guy, and I watch him grow up and play hockey. I like Michael Haley. I like almost everybody. I like Brian Boyle. I like everybody on that team. Love Brian
Nash.
Boyle. Rupp, there's another one.
Kreider. Well,
I know.
Kreider's got the potential to be someone loathsome, potentially. I don't know. I don't know much about that kid yet.
I know he's fast as hell, man.
Love Asham.
When those hands catch up with the feet, love it.
Here's a guy I don't like. I'll tell you exactly who I don't like. He's still on the roster. I assume he's still on the team. Matt Zuccarello. Because he disavowed the Magic Hobbit wizard nickname.
I know. He's gone. He's back in Europe, bro.
Is he back in Europe? He's still on their roster, I think.
He's still property of, but I think that ship has sailed. It's too bad. Little Hobbit would have been great in the NHL.
Oh no. Well, you know what? I was looking at the wrong thing. He's not on the Rangers official roster. So yeah.
They don't carry the contract anymore.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But he was a guy that I would have found loathsome only because he didn't like his nickname.
Zuccarello Asen.
That's right. Everybody like forgets nickname? That last part.
It's like, who else had a last part of his name that he just dropped? I'm blanking on his name. The first pick that Steve Tambellini made as GM of the Oilers. The half Finn, half Swede. Oh, God, why am I blanking on his name? Yeah, Magnus Pjärvi. His full name is Magnus Pjärvi Svensson. He is technically a Swede, but he's kept the Finnish last name. Mm. He's Magnus Pjärvi. But competing internationally, he compete for Sweden with a Finnish last name. Although he does have a Swedish last name, he's kept the Finnish last name and chopped off the Swedish last name. Mm. Figure it out. I don't know.
Karen Douglas, Wyshynski is right. Danny Briere can't stand him. Mark Cole, Danny Briere equals the Miz. I don't think Danny Briere ever. Now, in fairness to Cole, I forgot this one thing about Briere that I do respect. Man comes to play in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I agree with Section 328 on Twitter. You mean diving spearing piece of shit Danny Briere.
No. I like Danny. I'll stand up for Danny Briere any day of the week. That guy can play on my team. High skill, a little chippy. You're right. Shows up in the playoffs and puts up points.
Tell
gets
me
knocked
when
around and comes back.
Tell me I'll when take, Danny Briere Danny steps Briere. Up. But stands up. By that I mean I can't tell. He's very small. He's a very small man.
You go for a height joke. How do you think of Marty St. Louis? How do you make his height joke about Marty St. Louis?
I would never make any joke about Marty St. Louis. Marty St. Louis is a saint. Literally.
St. Louis.
Our question of the day is, how will the lockout affect
NHL
players?
Or bad ice?
Marty St. Louis?
Yeah, bad ice in Tampa, bro.
Well, every time they open the door, it melts a little bit.
I know. It's beautiful down there. It's awful everywhere. Why were people so up in arms when the Players Association, as it came out, that one of the things that they were arguing/negotiating about was improved quality of ice? Remember in the offseason, there was like all those like little side groups who would break off and discuss, you know, non-core CBA issues. And one of the main things, one of the platitudes for the National Hockey League Players Association was improved quality of ice all around. And the hue and cry came, oh, look at these pampered hockey players. Oh, pampered hockey. Oh, it's got to be perfect. Sheet of ice. Oh, you big sucks. You dopes. The better the ice, the better the game is going to be. Like,
right.
Why wouldn't you want a better game?
And essentially,
all you want to, and not have pucks skipping over sticks 5 minutes into the period.
Essentially, what they're arguing is, let's not allow certain teams to maybe lessen the quality of their ice for a competitive advantage. Cough, Rangers.
No, you know what? I will give the Rangers a pass on that one because that building is used for a kajillion things. There will never be good ice in New York. Now, there are some other teams, how shall I say this? Who, I don't know, when the Pittsburgh Penguins come to town, maybe they do, I don't know, drop twice the amount of water on the ice for the flood. I don't know, make it a little extra watery and sticky to begin each period. Maybe
now,
slow down a fast team.
Why would they do that? Because of Penguins. Oh, I see.
I don't know, make the ice. Oh, another thing I want to mention, while we're talking about quality of ice and all that, and we always get gaga over, you know, big records, and oh, back in 1932, they played 8 overtime periods of hockey, and that was, oh my God, what a war of attrition. The technology to flood the ice and provide a good sheet of ice, I don't want to say it's a relatively new phenomenon, but, you know, back in the 20s and the early 30s, flooding the ice after every period and getting a clean sheet of ice really was a baffling concept. So whenever you see, like, oh, they played 9 overtime periods, oh, look at the reason they did is because no one can get a shot on net because there was so much snow. There was so much piled up chipped ice and bad, you could not get a clear shot on net. So it's not, you know, I get this romantic lore about, you know, 8 grueling overtime periods. No, man, they were pushing snow on their blades. That's why you had a 2-1 overtime game after 15 periods of play. Just wanted to get that out of the way. That's been bugging me for a while.
Couple things.
Feel better now.
Remind me about Penguins. We do have to talk about that real quick.
All right.
Mike S. from Charlotte writes in, great stuff today, guys. Agree that NHL players are inherently good guys and will do what they can to grow the game. Do think they may be a bit more picky about what they choose to do after this lockout, though. May not reach for the Santa hat for the funny video as quickly as they would in recent years past. Will still visit with the kids, etc. I agree. I think there will be a point of separation for the players between doing the children's hospital thing, signing for fans after the game, that kind of thing, and maybe, I don't know, making that appearance at the used car dealership, or maybe being a dancing monkey at the All-Star game, or maybe, like we said earlier, playing on a slushy surface at night at an outdoor stadium.
I think the Winter Classic is the battleground because that becomes a workplace safety issue, and it's a legitimate one as well. Like the fact that those Pittsburgh Penguins players, Washington Capitals players, played in that delayed game, pushed from noon till what? When did it start? 7 or 8 o'clock. In the dark where, you know, shadows are different and the context is different. Like, I've always maintained, Wish, I don't know if I mentioned this on this podcast before, the Sidney Crosby, Dave Steckel injury, I don't think happens if they're playing in a controlled situation and it's not dark. Like, if you ask players that played in that game.
You think so?
Yes.
Boy,
yes.
That's a black helicopter theory. That's a conspiracy theory.
No. I don't think it's a, I just think it's, think about it. when you're playing, you know, 200 by 85 in a regular rink and the conditions are all controlled, you know where everybody is around you. The stadium is a little bit lit. Everything was dark, all right? So your angles are a little bit off. And that was a really sloppy game. If you go back and watch it, the Winter Classic is always a sloppy game because the conditions aren't perfect. So you're playing at about, what, 80% of what a normal NHL game? I would say it's even 10% less than that. It's a pretty sloppy game. Because context is different, shades are different. You look up in the stands for your bearings on the ice, and you don't see any of the normal markers that you have. And when have you ever seen Crosby make that sloppy a play to turn and keep going backwards while looking up ice? Like, that is not a Sidney Crosby play. Like, that's what struck me about that situation. It was such a sloppy, lazy play, and it's not one that Sidney Crosby makes. I've always maintained that if that game was played in controlled conditions, that Sidney Crosby incident doesn't happen.
That's probably why he was so angsty afterwards too, you know.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. I mean, there was all, I think it's remarkable, and every single one of those Capitals and Penguins players who played in that game should be commended for going the extra mile for NHL and for quote unquote the game that day.
Can we say that any of the Winter Classics have been very good hockey games?
No, not at all. But that's not the point. It's about the spectacle and it's about the celebration. But if you go there expecting good hockey, forget about it. You're not going to get it.
But it's also about something else, and I think that dials back to what we were talking about before about the players. It's about seeing those specific players in those elements. It's, you know, the All-Star Game is the one event every year where it's about the players. Without the players, there is no All-Star Game. No one gives a shit if it's a mid-level AHLer doing a skills competition. That's called the AHL All-Star Game. Nobody watches it. The Winter Classic, though, I think is second to the All-Star Game in the sense that 24/7 puts the spotlight on what? The teams? No, the personalities. The Winter Classic itself, the practice is about the personalities. The leading up to the game is about the personalities. The game itself is about the personalities. We want to see what Henrik Lundqvist does in the elements. The fact that Bryzgalov didn't play became a huge story because he's Bryzgalov. And because we had 4 or 5 weeks of basically a cinematic trailer for Ilya Bryzgalov, and then the movie never came out, right? So it's about the personalities, and I agree with you. Like, if these guys decided to turn tail and be like, look, we're not doing this because of quote-unquote our safety, or it could just even be about a cut of the money they get, then all of a sudden, what do you got with the Winter Classic? What do you got? It's as much about the players in the elements as it is the elements that game.
Do you find it interesting, surprising, or none of the above that the strength of this union will now be defined by how hard they are pressed by the NHL? Like, the NHL could make a really strong union here, or if they just do this deal, or they not even do this deal right now, get back to negotiating.
Well,
not say things like, no, this is our offer, we're not negotiating, take it or leave it. Like, just get back to negotiating and getting this deal done.
This is the one thing that hasn't really been talked about enough, to be honest with you. And you've hit on it here, which is what Donald Fehr does. You know, Donald Fehr isn't necessarily in there to just simply win as much as he can from the CBA, because inherently the players have already lost. They're going to lose contracting rights. They're going to lose percentage of revenue. They're going to lose a lot of things.
They already have those things.
Exactly. So they've already lost. What he's there for, and Colin Wilson of the Predators kind of danced around this topic last week when he was talking about the lockout. What he's there for is to make sure that this doesn't happen again, to poison the well, to show the NHL that if you go down this road with the players, they will not fold, they will not bend over and take it from you guys and get back on the ice at the first drop of the first proposal. They're going to make it really hellish for you, and they're going to make it really hellish for you every single time you try to take something from them. And that's what they're doing now. So it was maybe foolhardy of me to believe that we were going to get this thing settled sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas, because quite frankly, the NHL would like that. The NHL probably expected that. So to push this thing into January, to push this thing into the middle of January, to push this thing to the brink of Gary Bettman having to cancel a second season as commissioner, that's what they're looking to do. They're looking to get ass sweat going for the National Hockey League, not just brow sweat. They want full body sweat, okay? And they're going to get it, and they're going to make sure that every single owner and every single executive in this league knows that you can't do this to the players any longer. And that's what they're looking to do. And so maybe Even the optimistic of us, part of the PA strategy. Yeah,
that's,
even the optimistic among us who believes they're going to play, maybe we really needed to kind of take a step back and think about what the end game was going to be. It's not the end game is not canceling the season. The end game is not the PA falling on its sword and firing Donald Fear or anything. The end game is the PA pesting their way through this lockout as best they can, making it as uncomfortable, making Gary Bettman look as cadaverous as possible before there's a deal struck. And that's exactly what's happening.
If you're a hockey fan and you are not in the corner of how the Players Association has behaved through this lockout, then I would question how much you really hate lockouts. Because if the players just caved in, get a season, get the game back on the ice, yay, rah, 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 what happens next lockout when the owners say, you know what? That was really easy. You know, last time it was a full season. This time, a couple of weeks and these guys caved. What is the incentive to not do this again at the end of the CBA? Lock them out, and then maybe you will get your 43%.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
maybe you will get 3 years max. Maybe then you know your CBA is 15 years or however long you want it. What stops them? Like, everything the Players Association, in my mind, is doing now is not just for this deal, but is also for right. the next deal, and is also a warning to the NHL that if you want to go this route, it is not going to be easy. So you can, you know, you can get up and in front of microphones and be petulant and be angry all you want at how the National Hockey League Players Association is behaving and why Donald Fehr is, you know, stalling and taking his time. We need to get this. This is a lockout. And if you want to enact as a tactic the lockout, what the NHLPA is trying to do is make sure the NHL knows it will be slow and it will be painful. And if you want to use this as a tactic, we are not going to do things on your terms, or we are not going to do things on your time. And as a hockey fan, wouldn't you want that? I keep saying the same thing, Wish. Would you put up with a year or two of pain if it meant 20 years of peace? Or would you just say, you know what, let's just have a little bit of pain now, but then every time a CBA expires, let's go through more pain?
Yeah. And speaking
That's
of pain,
ask
I mean,
yourself.
We decided to spare you all of the pain of having to go through the legal wranglings of what's happened in the last since we last had a podcast. If you're interested in it, you could go read the stuff on TSN that really breaks it down in a very simple way as to how things are going, and you can read the tweets from Nick Kostanicka from Yahoo. There's stuff on Sportsnet as well. You could find out what's going on, but I mean, it's legal posturing. It's legal. It's you know, there's a certain level of apathy that already exists about this lockout because the issues at hand are so nebulous and tedious that no one cares. Well, now we've reached the point, now we've reached the apex of the I don't care-ism of the lockout when we go to the courts. Now we're getting rid of the people who even have a tangential interest in what's happening, and just it's basically just the legal guy on TSN, Myrtle, and Tyler Dello that care now. That's it.
You know, it's pretty funny. When this all came down after the podcast on Friday, I said to myself, you know what this lockout needs now? More lawyers and the courts. That's exactly what this lockout needs now. But one thing that I want to make sure we're all square on, you saw the list of 36 names of the players that were named in the class action lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Do you know why those 36 players were chosen specifically, Wish?
Why is that?
They all represent players that have different types of relationships with the National Hockey League. So players that have contract, players that are in the negotiating committee, players on long-term deals, short-term deals, players, well, like Michael Delzato, who was named in the class action suit as well, players that don't have contracts but are restricted free agents. And then the one tip-off that everyone, I'm sure most people picked up on, the big tip-off is one of the players named in the class action suit is a New York Rangers second-round pick by the name of Cristobal Neves. And you know why he's in there? Because he represents, in a class action sense, the player who has not yet entered the NHL but has been drafted by an NHL team. So in this class action filing, they are trying to cover the full spectrum of all types of players that have every specific relationship with the National Hockey League. So the class action really represents the full class of the NHL player. If you go look at all those individual players that were named, all those 36, they all have different relationships with the National Hockey League.
Anybody missing from that list?
Sidney Crosby.
That was something Merrick picked up on, by the way, and full marks to him because I didn't notice it. But that's an excellent point, man. Like, you think about outspoken players during this lockout. Sidney Crosby has done interviews after every single informal practice in Pittsburgh with those guys that have been out there skating around for the majority of the lockout. I would guess he has said something that probably could be used as evidence in an NHL legal filing. But lo and behold, Sidney Crosby's name not amongst the players.
Well, they're not stupid people, right? And again, I'd have to go back and look at everything that Sidney Crosby has said. And perhaps maybe, you know, Sidney's covered of all of his bases and hasn't said that. But it's a much bigger headline, NHL sues Sidney Crosby, than NHL sues David Backes. Because Sidney Crosby's named in that class action suit, you better believe, specifically in Canada, it's the NHL versus Sid the Kid who tried to save the game.
Right. Oh, by the way, Tom Ertz Jr. writes in, man, MDZ did a great job dancing around the questions on Merrick vs. Wyshynski Radio. Well, he's also named in this lawsuit. So, I mean, Delzato knows.
You understand the man is just named a class action suit.
He's not going to be dropping dimes in the NHL when his name's in a lawsuit, my friend. But I thought he was pretty candid about as much as he could be.
The fact that he came on to begin with, right? I think that shows some stones crying aloud. I mean, he's one of the 36 players named in a class action suit. Oh, and you know what? And you saw that the idea that the NHL would go to court to try to void all existing contracts should the NHL Players Association go the decertification route. You know who I thought of right away?
Who's that?
How'd you like to? Okay, so everyone becomes a free agent essentially. All contracts are null and void. How much money did Craig Leopold just pay in bonuses to the defenseman and the winger? And he may not
that
even
would
get
be
them.
His.
That would be. And then they go sign somewhere else with the $20 million in their hip pockets, or Shea Weber. Oh. All that money is all bonus.
Well, the Weber thing. I think Suter and Parise would obviously stay loyal geographically to the place where they signed.
You think?
That's why they signed there?
It's
all.
Hang on. Sure. You think they're amused that their owner is one of the guys driving the bus? I mean, Ryan Suter backtracked on it. He's already indicated as much.
How dare you, sir, indicate that these guys are nothing but simple mercenaries, as if they would go and take $200 million from Mike Ilitch when he offers it when they become free agents to go to the Red Wings.
Well, that's the thing, too. It's like, if you want to open up with no rules and no CBA, have at it, but that means no draft. And that means no salary cap and no such thing as a restricted free agent, because the CBA, that's the little bubble that protects owners from nasty little things like antitrust. Like, it would be the most fascinating landscape should the NHLPA go the decertification route and the NHL says, well, fine, we can null and void all contracts and we're just opening up for business. Because then you know where it goes, Wish? It goes back to where it was in 2004, 2005, when teams are carrying $73 million payrolls. Then we're not just right back at the beginning of where we were at the beginning of this lockout. We go back to the beginning of where we were in 2004, 2005. So if that's really the route the NHL wants to go, good luck to them.
That's if they lose.
I'm the legal expert. I know I may be totally off on this, but correct me if I'm wrong here. If there is no CBA, all right, to protect against antitrust legislation because they've ruled things like the draft and free agency and salary cap all legal and valid, and they're cool with that as a collective entity, the Players Association.
As a union, right.
If the NHL opens up where all contracts are null and void and there's no CBA, then don't they have to play by the normal market games? The same with the same way that, you know, Wendy's competes with McDonald's, competes with
there would
Burger
be
King, competes
no
with Taco
checks.
Bell?
No checks or balances on anybody. The Red Wings could
so it would
out
be
and sign Suter and Parise and Crosby tomorrow, and there would be no way to prevent it.
Man, how'd you like to be Edmonton and watch all those kids walk? How'd you like to be Pittsburgh and watch Crosby go to New York?
Oh, bite your tongue. I hope you mean Brooklyn. Otherwise, Jesus.
Like,
this
is way ahead of ourselves, and I don't believe for a second that it gets that far. I don't think the 36 players are ever going to go to court that class action.
Are you sure?
I don't think any of it does.
Because I would really like a way out of that Kovalchuk contract, to be honest with you.
Why, man? Dude's money. I love Kovalchuk. I think he's now.
He's a lot of money. He's $115 million worth of money.
Yeah. So, you want the player? Because he'll get that money. He'll get that somewhere else, don't you think? I mean, he was dinged up in the playoffs, and he still brought it every single night.
He was amazing. Like,
I fell in love with that guy's game this spring. I thought he was fantastic.
I like him too. It's just a very large contract. Zach from San Jose, I can't imagine the players being so bitter that they wouldn't do things like the Winter Classic. I just think it would take a staggering amount of cognitive dissonance for the players to want the league to succeed and to simultaneously want the league to pay for shitting all over them. I agree. And that's the tough part. It's like these guys inherently want hockey to thrive because it's in their best interest, it's for their bottom line, for their revenue.
Yep.
So it becomes a kind of a catch-22. Matthew McGreevy, players have become, yeah?
Do you think you see, and we saw this back in, previous to 2004-05, if it does go that route where things really become that acrimonious and the player's spine is stiffened, do we see more things like NHLPA hats in the dressing room and guys leaving the rink with NHLPA jackets?
Maybe. But again, like, it could be upwards of 7-8 years until the next time we go through this lockout stuff. So you might not see it straight away. But I wouldn't be surprised if you see it a hell of a lot earlier than we did this time, for sure. As we lead up to the next one. Matthew McGreevy, players have become individuals in the lockout. They've said what they want, looking at you, Chris Barch, and they've been given the opportunity not only to say they appreciate the fans, but to show it too. Simply responding to tweets shows a lot. Also, the pressed street hockey thing. Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. A couple other things.
Kessler and Bieksa, too.
Our lovely former producer, Elena Pagliarello, writes in.
Yo!
On names that have been dropped, Patrice Bergeron Cleary only goes by one last name, too. Full name, Patrice Bergeron-Cleary. Did you know that? Yeah.
Patrice Bergeron?
This is from a 2010 article from the Boston Globe. The Bruins Humble Center mused, yeah, I should be Patrice Cleary. His name is Patrice Cleary. Yeah. Yeah.
Patrice Cleary.
His father is Gerald Cleary. He made his way through youth hockey in his home province of Quebec, and as he has explained many times over the years, his name typically was truncated for simplicity's sake when in French Canada, do as French Canadians do, and therefore Bergeron was the name that stuck on the back of his hockey sweaters and youth hockey registration forms. He is actually, though, Patrice Bergeron Cleary.
I did not know that about him. Yeah, and you know why he was always interesting to me? I'm always in love with the story of the perpetual rookie. You know that story? The guy that only plays 1 year in every category. Like, I think he only played 1 year bantam, 1 year midget, 1 year in the Quebec League, and then right into the NHL. He was a perpetual. He was a rookie for like 4 or 5 years in a row. The perpetual rookie phenomenon to me is an interesting one because you never really get to settle in anywhere. It's great because you're such an awesome hockey player. You're making that stride. But I wonder what that does to you psychologically, always being a rookie every single season. You don't get this ever settle in with a team. Perpetual rookie, Patrice Bergeron.
Perpetual rookie. All right, everybody. That is the show for today. Big thanks to Michael Delzato for joining us and spreading some holiday cheer. I'm glad we got to the subject of his holiday sweater with the Rudolph threesome.
It was one of the best things of the Winter Classic. I hope he busts that out again. That should be his Twitter avatar, by the way. If you don't follow him, by the way, at Michael Delzato. Pretty entertaining guy. That should be his Twitter avatar.
Very much so.
The Humping Reindeer.
Hopefully he takes my advice and takes out those Flyers next year. Oh, boy.
Well, that means the Devils won't get that far.
Plug in. Listen, I don't expect them to make a
I know.
A couple things.
That's why they gave up the pick this year.
Shut up, Merrick.
You love me, Wish.
Year in review on Puck Daddy starts today. We go every day, save for Christmas, all the way up through New Year's Eve. Year in review. Our year in review is epic, and it's extraordinary. It's really solid. And we're going to do everything from fights to today is photos, player of the year,
all kinds of stuff. Me, Leahy, and Harrison banging it out. It's I'm really, there are things on the site that I'm really proud of that we do, and that's one of them. It's a really large undertaking, and I think it works out every year. So,
what not to sort of, you know, give away the entire story, but what are some of the more obscure elements of the year in review might you be dabbling into?
Well, we do a lot of different categories every year, and
that's what I mean. Like, do you do mascot of the year? Do you do minor league hockey promotion of the year?
Hold on. I'm looking at the list now. I was vamping for a second. Okay. Top 10 Twitter moments of 2012.
Oh, I love that.
For example, yeah. Then we have saves. We've got the alternative hockey awards that I write. Players, goals. It's a whole thing.
Do you have, like, podcast of the year?
No, but actually I am noodling through a rather lengthy piece that we'll do when the lockout ends that involves media. Just leave it at that. But anyways, good stuff. And also, as we mentioned on Friday's podcast, we postponed Jersey Fouls because of the tragedy. I wasn't really in the mood to write it, is the point. I'm feeling a little bit better about life now, and so Jersey Fouls on Tuesday. Tomorrow morning, if you're listening to this on Monday,
Will this have a particular European flavor to it? Considering not so many venues to pull these kick-ass jersey fouls.
Not to pull the curtain back or anything. By the way, we will have top 10 jersey fouls in the year interview. Not to pull the curtain back too far, but we do sit on a rather substantial war chest of jersey fouls.
Is that right? You've been holding them back.
Yeah, I'm only in like February. Right now.
What? Really?
Yeah. Yes.
There's that many?
Yes, there's that many. And I may have to hire an intern at some point to do some chronicling of the Jersey Fouls.
Chronicling?
Because we have a lot. And I've had to go back and dip into the archive and make sure that we haven't done them before. There's one that almost made the cut this year, or this week, rather, that we had done before. So any of you plucky interns out there want to join and join the Puck Daddy team as our official Jersey Fouls chronicler. Email us at puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com.
That's a pretty big position for someone.
Yeah. Very,
right?
Very
chronicler
impressive.
Of the Jersey Fouls?
I believe it's one of the more challenging yet pleasurable positions.
What?
Is there... I'm sorry, what?
Well, just looking at your resume here, it's... We don't have a job for you, but we do have a position.
Nope. It must be the end of the show.
Oh yes, of course it is. We get all pervy.
All right. Thanks to Delzato. Thanks to the good people at the Lookout in Manhattan, where I watched Bears Packers on Sunday. They have a champagne bottle that they cracked open when the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup on their wall, which is really cool to see.
Really?
A good Chicago-centric bar, much like there are good Pittsburgh-centric bars and all sorts of things in Manhattan, too. So it was a good time.
All right. Well, thanks to Boston Pizza here in Stouffville, where I had a glass of wine and some French fries on Friday night.
Was that on the house?
Thanks, Boston Pizza.
Was that on the owner?
No, I had to get out my onion wallet. That's the wallet. Whenever I pull it out, I start to cry. I had to get the wallet out. Actually, put down some of my own cash. Right. That's a big night for me. Glass of wine and fries.
To make up for the fact that we had to cut the show short on Friday, we have now gone extra long. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back on Wednesday, where we will talk to yet another free agent defenseman. And probably also about the legal wranglings of the lockout. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye. Thank you.